Hey, this is Nick Gelso, co-owner and founder of CLNS Radio. Today's podcast is brought to you by Lynda.com. Lynda.com is the home of expert video tutorials. Because you're such a loyal listener of CLNS Radio, and it's 2015, you want to kick the new year off in style, claim your free trial today from CLNS by going to Lynda.com/CLNS. That's LYNDA.com/CLNS. Now on to your regularly scheduled program.
Welcome to the Boston Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com.
Off the turnover, Rondo reverse, banks it in.
Fans, this is your destination for interactive Celtics coverage all season long.
Kelly still has time, takes it.
So what are you waiting for? We want to hear from you. Dial in at 347-215-7771.
Green out of the corner. Got another one.
Now let's get it started.
And welcome to the CLNS Radio Celtics postgame show playoff edition. Celtics Cavaliers first round. Cavaliers beat the Celtics 99-91 to go down 2-0 in the series, unfortunately, for all of us Celtics fans here. They couldn't hold it at the end, just barely, almost got it. But we're here anyway with the Celtics postgame show on CLNS Radio. You can call in at 347-215-7771. My name is Jess Thomas. You can find me at Twitter at CLNS_JessSayin. I will be here in a minute with Timmy Sclafani to break this one down. Make sure you call us to talk about this exciting game. It was a thrilling game, close throughout. The Celtics just don't have enough power on the road to beat the Cavaliers. I want to remind you that this show is brought to you by a couple of different things. First, Lynda.com, as we've been going over the last couple months. It is our 10-day free trial. You can head over to www.lynda.com/CLNS. That's LYNDA.com. You can get your 10-day free trial and go to your 4,500 different courses on web development, photography, WordPress, Photoshop, all that good stuff. It's a really good website to check that out. Also, we have a new sponsorship with the Reached app. You can go to www.reachedapp.com/CLNS. That's R-E-A-C-H-T-A-P-P. And you can get it for iOS or Google Play and answer questions that we ask on the different shows. So make sure you check out Reached. Also, you can get it's Audible. It's an audio book. We're partnering with them to get a free audio book from the world's biggest online library. Head over to audiblepodcast.com/Celtics. I want us Peak Brewing. Go to facebook.com/Peak Brewing or on Twitter, Instagram at Peak Brewing and check out their fantastic beer. I don't drink beer, so I wouldn't know, but I've heard it's good. Heard a lot of great things about it. So make sure you go check it out. So once again, I'm Jess Thomas and I am bringing on Timmy Sclafani here. He should be live now. Timmy, you there?
Hey, Jess. How's it going?
Good. Tough loss here tonight. Couldn't quite squeeze it out. The Celtics were within 1 point, really, but there's a couple of minutes left, and they slipped behind by 7 and made it a real close game, but just not quite enough power to overcome the LeBrons, we can call them, or at this point, the LeBrons and the Kyries. Just a tough ending of that game. What did you see there at the end?
I mean, that game, that hurt a lot worse than game one. I really think the Celtics ended up dropping that one. They had a really good chance at winning that, and they just couldn't quite seal the deal. I know they were within 4 pretty late, and it just seemed like, unfortunately, it seemed like Isaiah Thomas threw the ball away a couple of times.
Yeah, he had 4 more turnovers, which isn't horrible, but 9 in the 2 games combined is a little tough. The Cavs actually had a lot more turnovers than the Celtics did tonight, 18, and Boston had 11, which clearly gave Boston a good chance to come back and win this game. But just that's the thing with good teams, with the star players, whether it's they get the calls from the referees or they just force their way to the basket and just kind of crush your soul at the end when you just need that one extra basket. You see it from good teams all the time, not just the Cavs, but all good teams. And it's so tough to lose like that. And it's so hard to win on the road in the playoffs when you're a heavy underdog between just having to overcome all of those different obstacles. Even if you play really well, it's still sometimes tough to get the win.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, even it is frustrating, like you said. Four turnovers isn't even horrible for Isaiah. I mean, he had five last game. LeBron had six in this game. LeBron's got 11 over the first two games.
Yeah, he's had a lot of tough times. I mean, he hasn't really, for LeBron standards, he hasn't played fantastic. I mean, he had 20 points in the first game. Obviously, he racked up his rebounds and his assists, as well as tonight he had 30 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists. But like you said, the 6 turnovers, he missed 4 out of his 5 threes. And obviously, he made more of a difference tonight than he did on Sunday. But once again, he had his counterpart right with him, Kyrie Irving, who had 26 points. Not quite as dangerous as he was in game one, but he still scored almost as many points, still got 6 assists, and still made life tough on the Celtics. But I feel like the difference in this game was really Boston hung in it because of the three-pointers for Cleveland that they weren't making. The first game, Cleveland was 13 for 31 from three. Tonight, they were 7 for 29. And that made a huge difference because they didn't hit all the dagger threes that they hit in the first game, and it allowed the Celtics to hang around. But what did you see just throughout the third quarter is where the game really turned around, because it was close throughout the beginning, and then the Cavs went on a big run to start the third, and then it was Celtics playing catch up for the rest of the time.
Right. Well, like you said about Cleveland missing those threes, I believe that after Cleveland went on that run in the third quarter, I think they went on to miss 6 three-pointers in a row at the end of the third quarter. I think that has a lot to do with, fortunately for the Celtics, J.R. Smith has not been catching fire. He was 1 for 8 from behind the arc tonight, and at least 4 or 5 of those were very open looks, which you never want to see them giving that to a guy who can shoot like J.R. Smith, even though it hasn't been working out for him this series. He looks pretty frustrated with the officiating. I'm not sure if that has something to do with it. I think a lot of people are frustrated with that. But yeah, that's when the Celtics really need to capitalize, is when Cleveland is missing shots for a lot of consecutive shots like that. And Isaiah Thomas did do that. They looked good in the second half of the third quarter.
Yeah, they really looked good the rest of the game. They had less levels of poor play than they had in the first game. But the problem was the Celtics only shot 38% from the field. Cleveland only shot 44, which isn't that good, really. I mean, it's worse than they shot in the first game. And it's just that the Celtics could have made some more shots. They had more attempts. They had 9 more attempts than Cleveland, with Cleveland 7 more turnovers. But they couldn't knock down their shots. And I don't know if that's because of the atmosphere there, having trouble, if it's loud, or just you get nervous because you're a young team playing in a tough arena. But it's just if they could have just knocked down a couple more shots, they were getting more than the Cavs the whole game, and only had one less make as it was. But that was the problem throughout the game, is that they were getting more shots, but they weren't making enough out of the more shots to gain any kind of lead that they could sustain.
Right. Well, if we're talking about missed shots, you got to draw attention to Brandon Bass shooting 0 for 6 from the floor, which, as one of the few Celtics with playoff experience, I would have to say that that's just unacceptable. And 2 rebounds on top of that is nothing. Just really weak game from him. And game one was nothing from him.
Yeah, he's been a problem, which is weird because he had such a good regular season and he was one of the leaders of the team. I think it's more of a matchup problem. First of all, he's not playing very much. He only played 15 minutes, and clearly it's because he was ineffective shooting 0 for 6, like you said. But he's not getting playing time. When he is getting playing time, he's not making a difference. And that kind of drops one of your best contributors, because, you know, kind of my slogan throughout the year was, whenever you need a big shot from somebody in the Celtics, he was usually Bass getting you back into the game. And he was just non-existent tonight. Another guy that's more non-existent than he should be in this series so far has been Avery Bradley. He had 7 points in the first game. He had 8 points tonight. He seemed more involved tonight. He was definitely more involved with the game, playing some good defense. But they need more than 8 points from Bradley for the game, and 15 points in 2 games. Because this guy is your second best scorer besides Isaiah Thomas. And if he's giving you 7 and 8 points, that really hurts.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with Avery Bradley as well. I mean, he shot 30% from the field. It could be worse. I mean, he did shoot 2 for 2 from behind the arc. But he was a minus 12, and like you said, only 8 points, which from a leader and one of their best contributors like Avery Bradley, Celtics are going to need more from that. You have to hope when they get back on the home court that something's going to click for him. But so far, I expected Bass and Bradley to be two of their top contributors, being two of the few with playoff experience on the team. And so far, it's clearly been, I mean, Isaiah Thomas, even Marcus Smart had 10 points tonight, Zeller with 11 points. And those guys with much less experience have been the ones really showing up in Cleveland, at least.
Yeah, you got it. Need the experienced players to step up a lot bigger here the rest of the series. If you want to call into the show at 347-215-7771, we'd love to hear from you. We got a lot of callers right now, so Timmy, we're going to jump into the callers here. Our first one is Nick in Peru, and you're now on the line, Nick.
Hey, what's going on?
How's it going? So I saw you wanted to talk about LeBron James.
Just the game in general. I mean, it's to the point. I've been listening to CLNS. I actually used to write for the blog a long time ago with Nick and everybody else. But I've been listening to the show and calling in since I think about 2012. So the thing is, it's just to the point when I watch these games, and I mean, I've talked about this on the show a long time ago, several times. When I watch these games, it looks almost just too scripted. Like the third quarter was identical to the third quarter from last night. The Celtics got into the penalty early, literally with like 7.5 minutes left to go in the third quarter. And it's like, you know, once that happens, you can't breathe on LeBron James. You can't breathe on Kyrie Irving. And you're going to send them to the line with 7.5 minutes left to go in the third quarter, of course. And that's when they make their big comeback or their big, you know, their big rush, their big push. And, you know, suddenly the Celtics are down by, you know, 7, 8, 14 points. You know what I'm saying? That you just can't overcome that. On top of that, you look at things. I counted two clear, explicit examples that even Chris Webber in his, you know, extreme lack of basketball insight as a commentator on the TNT broadcast even noted on one of them in the fourth quarter. Kyrie Irving taking a jump shot, a two-pointer, just falls down after the jump shot, and they call a foul. Avery Bradley played perfect defense on him. Kyrie Irving falls down after the jump shot. They send him to the line. The same thing happened, I think it was in the first quarter. Marcus Smart is running up under a pick, and doesn't even touch Kyrie Irving, just run, like, is literally ducking under where his shoulders are at Kyrie Irving's waist, you know, height, as he's jumping for the jump shot on a three-pointer. Call him for the foul, give him 3 points. Those are 5 phantom points that they gave to, you know, this team that do not exist. Then on top of that, I see things, you know, the TNT commentators, I think it was Marv Albert, Evan Turner was battling for a rebound, and his arm goes back and almost smacks LeBron in the face, and one of the commentators says, oh, well, they're going to have to look at that. But why don't they ever look at LeBron? Why aren't they going to look at LeBron? Why did they say nothing about LeBron when he goes up for a dunk, swings around on the rim, and kicks, literally takes 2 kicks at Marcus Smart's head? Why does nobody say anything about that? These people, it's just almost unbelievable to watch the way that this game. It's not basketball. I find myself yelling at the screen. I scare my wife and my son sometimes because I'm yelling. This isn't basketball. This doesn't look like basketball to me. What I'm watching is just I watch LeBron James setting picks, and they're not even picks. Like, there used to be a moving screen rule in the NBA, I think, at some point. You know, there used to be. And I'm watching LeBron literally clearing out defenders, not people that are trying to guard him, but people that are trying to get to the shooter. And he's literally pushing them backwards, and there's no calls. This isn't basketball. I don't know what this game is. I mean, it would be one thing if it was applied, universally to everybody equally, but the way the NBA is played now is that it's so superstar-focused that if you don't have a player that's a household name, you're not going to win. You're just not going to win. And it's a shame that we don't have a player that is a household name. Isaiah Thomas should be a household name, but because we got maybe, what, 2 nationally broadcast games the entire season, nobody knows who the F we are. You know what I'm saying? They don't even – Chris Webber was calling our coach Brad Stevenson tonight. I mean, like, the whole game was calling him Brad Stevenson. I mean, this is, and if you don't have the recognizable names, like a LeBron James, like a Uncle Drew or whatever that clown's name is, Kyrie Irving, if you don't have these guys, you will get nothing. And it's just disappointing to me. I'm 34 years old. It's disappointing to me who's watched this game since I was, you know, before I was even a teenager, since I was a little kid. I've been a Celtics fan since I was a little kid, and my uncle used to sit me down, and I watched Larry Bird actually win games. I'd watched Kevin McHale actually win games. In the real way, where you could get, you know, touched, and you wouldn't go to the line for these phantom things, where you actually literally had to get a Bill Laimbeer elbow to the face to actually get to the line. And now I'm looking at this stuff, and it's like, when you can look at the game and you can say, well, this is the point where this is going to happen now, and then that's exactly what happens. Well, this is the point where the Celtics are going to get in the penalty, and the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to go to the line 100 times, and they're not going. The Celtics are going to get mugged. You know what I'm saying? This is what they do. I can tell you what they do, and this is what they did in the third quarter. Is that they'll call the Celtics on for some like real petty tic tac non, or they'll call the Cavaliers for some tic tac fouls on non-shooting fouls for the Celtics that will get the crowd all hyped up. The refs are giving the Celtics an advantage there. So then when the Celtics come down next time and they're actually taking a legitimate shot, driving to the hoop, they get mugged and there's no call. That's how they set it up. They make it look like the Celtics are getting an advantage by calling the tic-tac fouls on Cleveland earlier on non-shooting fouls. But then when they drive to the hoop, they get mugged and there's no calls for the Celtics on, you know, when they drive the hoop. That's how they do it. I can watch the games and they can see it happen.
I'm totally with you on that. It's really, it's like, it. I see what you mean by saying it's scripted. It's like, you can't touch anybody if you're a superstar, and you don't get those calls if you're not a superstar. And it shouldn't be like that, because be able to not have a superstar and be able to win some playoff games. It's not fair. I totally get what you're saying. So I appreciate your call, Nick. I'm glad that you came back on the show after a number of years. Appreciate the call in, and totally agree with you, and I'm sure a lot of other people agree with you too. So we're going to head over to another caller, but thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you. Take it easy.
You too. All right, we're going to head over to our next caller here, and it's going to be Coach Rich to talk about the game in general. How you doing?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good. What were your thoughts tonight? Tough loss, you know, they were in it the whole time, and kind of what Nick was just talking about, it's hard to win when you're the underdog, when you don't have things going your way.
Yeah, it is, and you know what, I mean, talent wins out at the end of the day. I mean, I hate to admit it, but, I mean, their season, Kyrie and LeBron going to the rim, it's tough to stop. We don't have that physical body that's going to be able to stop LeBron at this point, and that's going to be a problem. You were talking about J.R. Smith. Let him take 15, let him take 20, because when Calvin and I were talking the last game, J.R. Smith shoots, he's going to shoot the Cavaliers, he's going to shoot the Celtics back into a game, because he just, you know, that's the way he is. But I want to comment about Avery Bradley. Being a basketball coach, one of the things I see is that Avery Bradley is expending a ton of energy playing defense, and when you're doing that and to the physical demands that it's taking for him to play defense, I think that is affecting his offensive end. I think that, you know, his focus is trying to shut down the Cavs at the other end. And his defense, his offense is going to take a little bit of a hit. And you're right about Brandon Bass. I mean, you know, a missed shot, especially the shots he's missing, to me are like turnovers when you're coaching. And, you know, you got to get him out of there. You know, we might be seeing the end of the Brandon Bass experiment, especially if, you know, we can get some size and some – maybe a couple power forwards in the draft or for some trading. I just think that his time's coming to an end. I don't know if you guys agree with that, but if he's not going to give us anything in the playoffs when that's what he's there for, regular season to me doesn't mean anything now if you're in the playoffs. So you got to get something out of him. But I'm proud of this team and how hard they're playing and the fact that they just don't go away. I had to laugh. They were talking about after interviewing LeBron, and they're saying, you know, the Celtics got out to a big lead. Since when is a 9-point lead in the first half a big lead? I mean, it's just riding the Cavs. And, I mean, come on, really? I mean, 25-point lead is a big lead. So I'm sick and tired of hearing that garbage. I don't know if you guys caught that interview at the end of the game on the floor, but, you know, it's just a LeBron and the Cavs love fest, I guess.
It always is. Timmy, jump in.
It is. But you know what? You got to expect it. And let's hope the home crowd gets up and, no, LeBron's right. The Cavs, if they make those mistakes in Boston, you know, Celtics could steal game three and, you know, who knows, get to game four and put a little pressure on them, because the Cavs will have everything to lose at that point. They don't want to have the Celtics tie them up and have to force it into a three-game series, because you never know. If you're going to shoot threes like the number of threes they took tonight, you live and die by that too, you know. So How about that call on Bradley in the corner at the end of the game? I put a tweet on there about a 4-point swing when the clock was running down and Irving flopped again in the corner. I as a basketball coach, even if it wasn't the Celtics, that just drives me nuts. That's an integrity part of the game. And if you're going to flop, I mean, of course he's trying to draw it, but come on, really? They're going to give him that call? That was a critical point, too, because that 4-point swing, I think the Celtics were down by 6 at that point. They go down and get a 3-pointer, you know, and it cuts it to 3. So the league's got to be better than that in situations, especially in the playoffs. So,
Timmy, right. weigh in on that terrible call.
Well, it was awful.
The officiating throughout these first two games has just been absolutely infuriating. And
yep,
it's easy to pin it on that after two losses in a row. But I'll easily admit that it's been pretty horrible going Cleveland's way too. Like I said, I mean, I almost feel bad for J.R. Smith, some of the calls that they've given him, and he just looks like he's hurting out there from them. But the Avery Bradley call, it's exactly as the commentator said. I mean, Kyrie Irving came down, his foot came down where Avery Bradley was standing, if even that, and he went over because of that. And I believe the Cavs had a 4-point lead at that point, and that gave them the free throws that put them up by 6. And that was essentially what finished the Celtics off. And the momentum and the crowd noise at that point, that was really what finished the game. And that was just a bad call. It was wrong.
Yeah, and the other thing, they got the two offensive rebounds that Thompson got at the end of the game that were just hustle plays. That's got to end, too. I mean, they're not going to beat the Cavs in spite of the officiating and LeBron and Kyrie if they don't fix that. That's the
biggest problem so far in the whole series is the offensive rebound. It's just whenever the Celtics need that big defensive rebound, when the Cavs miss a big shot, when the Celtics need to make a big shot, it's just not happening.
Yeah, and you see a lot of – I'm watching eyes, and I'm seeing a lot of ball watching. They're not putting bodies on people. They're looking for the ball and trying to out-jump the Cavs, and that's not going to happen. You know, they got to find it. They got to get a body. And I still think that goes to the physicality and the need for some more physical, stronger bodies. That's why I love Jay Crowder. I really do. I love this kid. I think that was a steal moving forward. I really see that kid as being a part of this team. And I love his energy and his hustle. And he's physical. And I'd like to see a couple more bodies like that. You know, maybe somebody out or San Antonio way, maybe drag him over. You know, obviously the golden egg if they could pull him. But, they just need to be more physical. But still moving forward, guys, this team has really impressed a lot of people. I live in Western New York, and, you know, it's not a big basketball hotbed here. But, you know, a lot of people are talking about the Celtics. They know I'm a big Celtics fan. I'm wearing all my green. A lot of people are talking about how impressive and how impressed they are with how they're staying with the Cavs. So for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be good rest of the series. It'll be a fun home game. So, I mean, this is the time to grab some momentum back because the series is not over. They've only won 2 games. They got to win 4. The road games are tough. So just got to go home and win the home games.
Yeah. I wish I wasn't 8 hours away. I'd be coming down looking for a ticket, but unfortunately
they're pretty expensive right now, but
yeah, you know what though? It's a once in a lifetime experience. I was fortunate to come in 2010. My buddy was a Lakers fan and we came down, I think it was for game 5, and we came down on a weekend, and never in my life have I been to something with so much energy. It was against the Lakers in the championship game. So it was just, I'd do that again in a heartbeat. I don't care what I have to pay. It was bucket list ideas, you know. But
absolutely.
Well,
it's
good luck.
It's a good
place
to be.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for the call, Coach Rich.
Hey, thank you.
Appreciate it.
I'll talk to you guys after game 3.
All righty. Take care.
Good night.
Good night.
Alrighty, Timmy, we've had a lot of calls here. We do have a couple more on here. I want to bring Nick Gelso in, the founder of CLNS Radio. We gotta have him come in here. He's the reason we're doing this stuff. So I know he goes to bed early, so we'll bring him in here. Nick, what do you got for us?
Yo. Yeah. I'll be quick. I know you have a lot of callers, but just listening to Nick and then Coach Rich brings back great memories, but good observations tonight. I mean, Nick, to a certain extent, we can all bitch about officiating. But this is, no matter what team LeBron goes to, this is the story. It was the story with the Cavs the first time, then Miami, now back with the Cavs. the officiating, it's very frustrating to watch. When you're not a LeBron fan, it's very frustrating to watch. It's hard to get into a flow of the game when he's, you know, charging with the ball because you can't even go near him without them calling a foul. But that sounds sour grapes, so I'll move forward from that. I really agree with you guys on Brandon Bass. I mean, you're looking at Bradley and Bass being the only two elements left of, you know, not the championship, but that era. They know, especially Bass, they know playoff situations. And in a series like this, when at the close of the game, the Cavs are really, you know, the crowd's in it and the Celtics look rattled, nothing would silence the crowd better than being able to throw into the post to Brandon Bass and hit a shot to demoralize, you know, the Cleveland crowd. And that's, I really think tonight mainly showed, you know, the lack of the fact that there really isn't a leader of this team to slow things down and, you know, just really calm and stabilize the team. And that's what you saw down the stretch. But, that's it. That's it, guys. I do love watching this team. They're a lot of fun. And I think that they're going to give them a real struggle in game three, because LeBron, you know, like you guys said, he's been very effective quietly, but it's commanded a lot of energy and a lot of minutes. I think he played over 40 minutes tonight. So going into Boston, did he? Yeah, I knew they were getting up there. And we also know Kevin Love hasn't even appeared in the series yet, really. Tonight, I don't know. He maybe attempted 9 or 10 shots.
Eight
shots, okay, 3 for 8. So he's really not been in the game, and I know he doesn't have double-digit boards, even though the Cavs have massacred the Celtics on the offensive boards. Love probably didn't have double-digit boards. So, you know, going into Boston, no. If anything, it looks like the playoffs are – Love is a little lost in the Cavalier system, or the playoffs have already gotten to him, which going into Boston, I've covered many playoff games out there and been in attendance for many. It's going to be a madhouse there on Thursday night. And I think – when is game 4? Is it Saturday?
It's Saturday. Sunday.
Yep. Sunday or Saturday?
I believe Saturday? It's Sunday. It's Sunday.
It's Sunday. Yeah, if it was Saturday, too. I was going to say if it was Saturday, those are usually the rowdiest games because everybody's been at the pubs all day long. So, but
no, it's
yeah,
Sunday
I think
at 1.
Thursday it'll be really raucous, and I think that's the game for the Celtics to win, and they have to win it. They can't go down the stretch. They can't build big leads and allow Cleveland to come back. Our second unit, led by Isaiah Thomas, is superior than the Cavs' second unit. I don't even know if the Cavs' second unit scored tonight. You know what I'm saying? Maybe they had, I don't even know.
I think it's 7 points.
Okay, 7 points.
Yep,
you know,
7 points.
The Celtics' second unit has to take advantage, even though LeBron or Kyrie are going to be in at the same time. That's when to really, really attack and spread leads to a point where Cleveland is not going to be able to come back, you know, at the drop of a coin. Anyway, I know you got a lot of callers. Great job, guys. And I'd love to hear your observations on what I just said. So I'll talk to you later.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for calling, Nick.
Have a good night. All right. We've actually gone a little lull of callers here. So Timmy, let's talk since we're the host of this show here. Once again, this is the Celtics postgame show here on CLNS Radio. As you know, people have been calling in at 347-215-7771. Talk to us about this game 2, 99-91 Cleveland victory to take a 2-0 lead. So the first thing I want to start with of what we've heard about here, we'll try to remember what everyone's said and kind of digest it. But what Nick just mentioned, the bench points, the Celtics outscored the Cavaliers bench 51-7 tonight. 51-7. That's unbelievable. Just think about that. Let it soak in. First thing is it's a problem because it means the Celtics starters are only scoring 40 points. That's another issue. But that's just such an advantage for the Celtics. And I personally think that's going to come in handy in game 3.
Yeah, I agree. Even
I think late in the third quarter, early in the fourth, I was looking at Cleveland's bench. And, I mean, Iman Shumpert, who's usually relatively impactful. He's done good things for their team since he's come. In 25 minutes, he shot 1 for 3, and he scored 2 points. Tristan Thompson, no points, and he played 26 minutes because Mozgov and Love were in foul trouble. And I'm not sure exactly how the Celtics can do that, but that they need to capitalize on that. And Nick just mentioned LeBron played 42 minutes. You have to think coming into Boston on Thursday, he might be a little tired. That's all that we can hope
for. He is 30 now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, their bench isn't doing it. So let's hope those starters are starting to get a little worn down from these first two games that the Celtics really made competitive.
Well, you know, it's like David Blatt's afraid to play anybody else but his big guns because, yeah, looking even deeper into the minutes, 42 for LeBron, 39 for Kyrie Irving, and then J.R. Smith had 34, Love had 29, Mozgov had 28. Those are heavy minutes for the starters, not as much for Love and Mozgov because Love wasn't very effective, as Nick also mentioned, but just like barely even playing the bench. And I mean, I guess it's better to have less of a rotation in the playoffs, because if you have those star players you have, but if you're playing long series and if you're playing a lot of series, if you keep winning, these guys might get gassed at some point. I know Irving's young, but he hasn't played in the playoffs yet, so he hasn't played a longer season than 82 games. He might get tired. LeBron's been in the league 12 years now. He's 30. He may get tired. I mean, he's played more games than anyone. He gets to the finals every year. So it's like these guys might get tired at some point. And I think it's a mistake for Blatt playing them so many minutes just because they might wear it down, and you do have a bench that you can play. And if they're a good enough team, as they're supposedly are, they should be able to win with bench guys too. And I don't think they can because they don't have much of a team other than that. Do you think he should be playing the bench more?
I all that I can say in terms of David Blatt versus the Celtics is the player with the third most minutes on the Cavaliers is J.R. Smith, who's, I think we would all agree, is nothing particularly special. He played 34 minutes, which is greater than the team high on the Celtics, which was Evan Turner with 33.5 minutes.
And like wow. I said, I didn't realize that.
The Celtics need to capitalize on that. The fact that like you said, Cleveland should have three players that are at least more gassed than the Celtics' entire team. And the Celtics' distribution of minutes falls all over the place between 20 and 30 minutes, and Cleveland's is much more lopsided. And I think come game three, Brad Stevens will find a way to capitalize on that mismatch.
Yeah, you're totally right. It's a great point that J.R. Smith played more than anybody. It's good because the Celtics have a lot of good complementary players who can play well and kind of spread out the minutes. I mean, Jonas Jerebko had a pretty big impact in game one. And he only played 4 minutes tonight. And we know that Gigi Datome and Phil Pressey and guys like that can play very well off the bench as they did in the regular season. They're not even getting any playing time. And then you still have 9 other guys besides those guys already playing minutes. And, you know, they're producing. It's Jared Sollinger had a great game tonight. He had 14 points in 22 minutes. Jay Crowder had 10 points in 29 minutes. Olynyk played 21. Zeller actually played, I want to ask you about him. Zeller actually played 30 minutes tonight. And that's a surprise to me because I actually noted in my notes during the game before it started that Zeller always seems to play really well at the beginning, and then Stevens just stops playing him and he's not effective anymore because he just comes in like 1 or 2 minute spurts. But actually 30 minutes tonight for him is, I'm not going to guarantee this, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was a season high because he doesn't usually play that much. Why do you think Zeller played more tonight?
It's funny. I had the exact same thing written down that, and the same thought. He comes in at the start of the game, and I think in many games this season, he's been the spark for the Celtics right off the bat. He'll usually hit 3 or 4 of their first maybe 5 shots, and it was that way tonight. I remember right at the start, Marcus Smart hit him with a really nice pass, and he was playing well in the post, and then exactly like you said, after the first quarter when the other centers and forwards start getting in the rotation, it's like he's only getting put in 2 minute increments or minute long or minute increments, and then he's not really effective in those spurts. and I'm happy that he played 30 minutes tonight, but I guess personally I'd rather see him get put in for 5-minute blocks at a time rather than these 2-minute blocks, which have proven inefficient for Tyler Zellett.
Yeah, I definitely like that he's getting more time. It frustrates me because I feel like he should be getting more time because he's been a solid contributor all year. So we're going to bring on another caller here. We got one of our trusty co-hosts and lead hosts, Calvin Chamberlain. It's been on hold for a little bit here, so we'll bring him in here for a couple of minutes. Calvin, what is another good effort tonight? But what did the Celtics need to do to get over that hump?
Yeah, I have some very specific opinions that might go a little contrary to what you would look at in the box score. I heard you talk about that you guys thought Jared Sullinger had a good game. I did not think he had a good game, and I don't think it's good to have him out there on the floor for very long for a couple of reasons. One, they left him wide open at the three-point line, so he's doing nothing to help their spacing. I feel like the only chance the Celtics have in the series is if they're able to get to the rim, and they need certain lineups out on the floor to give Isaiah the opportunity to drive, to give guys like Crowder and Bradley that lane to the rim. And I think that when you have Sullinger out there, particularly with how slow he is on rotating defensively, in my opinion, even though he scored 14 points, he's not giving you enough on either end in terms of making your overall offense better. He sort of isolates his points, unto himself. And defensively, he's just way too slow to rotate. And the help defense is terrible when he's out on the floor. I'd like to see his minutes reduced drastically, for one. What do you think about that?
Yeah, Timmy, I want to hear your thoughts on Calvin's thoughts about Sullinger.
Actually, Calvin, I would just have to disagree with a couple of the points you made. I personally did think that he had a good game. I was ready to hear your points, and they are good points. But you said when he's out by the perimeter, they're leaving him open, which is not contributing to the spacing, but he shot 50% from behind the arc. I mean, he hit two pretty consequential three-pointers that really kept the Celtics in the game. And then I completely agree that he's a defensive liability, and I still think he's kind of getting his feet back after he missed a good chunk after the All-Star break with an injury. But I just want to say also, there's a lot to be said for 3 offensive rebounds out of 5 total rebounds. That was a major contribution from Sullinger, and I think that justifies the 22 minutes that he played tonight.
Yeah, but two of those were offensive rebounds that fell into his lap. One was on his own missed shot. Another one was a shot that went over the rim and back around to the other side and right into his hands. I just think that especially when I like what Brad Stevens has done this year, and far be it for me to criticize him in general, but I sort of. My impression of what's going on here with the Celtics is that he's trying to coach these games the same way he's coached this entire season, and I think he needs to look at matchups a little bit more with what's going on with the Celtics. I'll give you another example. Like again, not to pick on a guy who I like. I think that he had a decent game offensively, particularly early. But I don't think they should be playing him as much with Mozgov out on the floor. Is Tyler Zeller. Like it's simply for the same reason, because one, Tyler Zeller's not offering you enough rim protection to really justify added value he has on that end. Yeah, Mozgov is bigger than anyone else you're gonna put out there with him. But honestly, if you isolate Mozgov on somebody like Bass or a smaller guy, if Timothy Mozgov scores 30 points on you and the Cavs win the game, I almost feel like you have to live with that, because what happens on the other end is Mozgov killed them tonight because of guys like Zeller, because of guys like Sullinger, he was able to stay in the lane. I think you need to play Olynyk a little bit more. You saw it in game one. It pulled Mozgov away from the lane and opened it up for guys like Evan Turner and guys like Avery Bradley and guys like Isaiah Thomas, because otherwise, to me, the Celtics looked awesome at every moment that Mozgov wasn't in the game, and the moment that he came back, it was like they immediately shut down and couldn't get to the rim at all. And I think it has to do with the fact that they're playing the wrong guys out there.
Yeah, I could totally agree with that. It's tough to know so far who exactly you should play and who you shouldn't. I like both your points on Sullinger. I have been a big fan of Sullinger for a while, and I think he played a much better game tonight than he has recently. I'm going to tell you, Calvin, Nick Gelso agrees with you on Sullinger. He told me to tell you, so you got a fan in Nick there. I don't necessarily agree, but I agree with your thoughts of just figuring out who is going to. Well, the problem with this is there's no leader. Like, it's everyone's playing a decent amount of minutes.
Well,
it's hard to figure out.
You know? I mean, that's right. Isaiah is going to take over and be the leader, but I think for him to be effective, he needs that lane to be clear. He can't keep going right in Moskov, and that's why I think you need Olenek to play more minutes to pull him out. Or, you know, if you want to go small and play Jurebko at four, you should be doing that because Jurebko can actually hit that perimeter shot, or at least, you know, pull a defender away. That's my thing. So, yeah, Jared Sellinger hit 2-4, but the rim was sealed off the entire time he was out on the floor. Do something else. Like, Jay Crowder played 30 minutes, and I think that's great because, you know, Evan Turner can't really guard LeBron at all. And granted, nobody can guard LeBron, but Crowder is doing as good of a job as you can expect anyone to do. But what I don't get is, like, in my mind, every time LeBron takes a breather, Jay Crowder should take a breather. Every time he should be starting, in my opinion. Every time Crowder's in the game, or every time LeBron's in the game, Crowder should be in the game. There was a period at the start of the fourth quarter where LeBron sat out, and those were Jay Crowder's minutes out on the floor, and I didn't understand. He should be sitting down during that time. They don't need him offensively. They need him to guard LeBron. I feel like Stevens should be the guy synced up with LeBron in that situation, and I don't understand why he's not.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of question marks of who should be doing what. And actually, I want to get Jared Weiss's take on that. He's calling in. So Calvin, I'm gonna boot you off here, but we appreciate the call. I love how you always come up with the opposite side, the devil's advocate to what we say. I love it. It's great stuff, and it makes for good shows. Appreciate it.
All right, guys.
Good night.
Thanks, Calvin. Alrighty. The man, the myth, the legend. I don't know about a myth. I think he's proven himself at this point that he's not a myth. Anyway, we got Jared Weiss on here. Jared, how you doing?
I do actually exist.
Well, I think so. I hear you right now, so I think you're right.
Yeah, I'm bummed, though. I was hoping to get on with Calvin. It's always a lot of fun to talk with him. And he made a great point there at the end that Jay Crowder should always be on the floor as much as possible. I wouldn't be surprised to see them change the starting lineup to have Jay Crowder in there at the four, and maybe even Olynyk at the five. I think that they're best, from an offensive perspective, they seem to be best off with Olynyk in the game, with Sollinger or maybe Zeller. Zeller's been playing pretty well in the series, but with Zeller, he always seems to be really good at the beginning of halves, and then he kind of tapers off at the end. He doesn't really get the minutes later in the halves. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens, but there's no question Stevens is going to change the starting lineup going into game three.
That's an interesting point. I kind of want them to change the lineup. It's like, you know, you lose the first two games, you don't really have anything to lose. You might as well switch it up and see if different guys can do different things at different points. Timmy, what do you think about a lineup change?
I agree with bringing Jay Crowder in. I actually, just because I'm like the biggest Kelly Olynyk fan in the world, I would love to see him get back into the starting lineup. And I do agree with what Calvin was saying about he brings a different set of skills to the table than Tyler Zeller does.
He has a particular set of skills, as Liam Neeson would say. You know, it's the thing is, while Zeller's been really good and he has played a crucial role in keeping the Celtics alive early in the games, because really offensively the Celtics had come out kind of dead early in the games, and they really relied on Zeller making some good mid-post plays. But offensively, as the game goes on, Olynyk is a better fit for this team. And the main reason being, as Calvin said, and this is why I love Calvin, because he really knows the game so well. And what's really important is Isaiah Thomas is trying to drive 1-on-4 every single possession. Now, it works because he's as good at it as just about anybody in the Eastern Conference. So he gets his 10 free throw attempts every game. He hits all of them. He always ends up with 22 points for some reason, no matter what. It's always 22. It's not just 20. It seems to always be 22. But the thing is that he's just trying to go right at Mozgov, right at LeBron. And while overall it'll put up good numbers, his last couple of possessions of the game is where the defense seems to always stop him. Once in a while, he's able to win, but you're not going to, you know, I'd say Isaiah Thomas with him just going 1-on-4, it'll win you the game about 30-40% of the time, but in a 7-game series, it doesn't matter. It's not going to win you the series. So they got to try something else. Having Olynyk out there, especially with Sollinger, if they need to do two bigs, that's going to open up the floor a little bit more for them. Olynyk and Solinger, they haven't been shooting the three ball that well in the series, but Solinger was pretty effective tonight. He had his first multiple three-point game since, I think, February 4th against Denver. So it's been a while since he's had two threes in a game before tonight. But if they can – I mean, this has been the most important thing for the Celtics. I'm sure LeBron, Kyrie, crazy, what are you going to do about it? They have to hit threes. They have to shoot 50% from three if they want to have a chance to win the series. Tonight, they went 6 for 22. That's a 27%. They're not going to win the series if they're not sinking threes. It's the only way that they could have an advantage. They're not that good of a three-point shooting team. They're designed to be a three-point shooting team. Maybe next year or the year after that, if they could be a good three-point shooting team, they could actually be a serious contender to come out of the East or at least get to the conference finals. But until they start hitting threes, they just don't have a prayer of winning a game in the playoffs.
Yeah, you're totally right. They really need to knock down their threes, and they've taken a lot all year, and they haven't made a lot consistently in a lot of games, except for a stretch of a couple games there where they were just going insane from three. They really need to figure that out quickly in the series. Well, Jared, just for you, we got Calvin back on the line. He's the man of the hour. Calvin, welcome back.
Jared, I have a question for you. I'm glad you're on the line. I thank you for throwing me that compliment. I heard it right now, but Do you think that Stevens might be smart to try to switch Smart over onto Kyrie for the next game? Because he's a lot more physical than Avery Bradley, and I'm wondering if that change – obviously, Kyrie can basically take anyone off the dribble, including Avery Bradley, and if the times where Avery seems to frustrate him is when he can't get by him and when he sort of muscles him up, I feel like Marcus Smart might be a little better at that. Why do you think it is that he really hasn't seen much time on Kyrie at all?
You know, I'm actually a little surprised. I think it's mostly been fouls. I think that they're getting him on there a little bit, but he's committed a few fouls. Kyrie, he's gonna turn your ankles a few times, but he's also gonna go into your chest, and that's when Marcus draws those fouls. Marcus, usually the fouls happen when you're driving into his chest and he fouls you, or if he's overhounding you around like the perimeter, he'll get those calls too. So I think that just Kyrie's done a pretty good job of getting Smart into foul trouble, and I actually would rather see Smart, even if he does get into foul trouble, I'd rather see him stay on them because they need him on there. I mean, Avery's done his tried against Kyrie. I think Kyrie, while I wouldn't blame Avery Bradley for playing poor defense, I really think Kyrie has just been playing fantastic. One of the best players in the league over the past week. He's been phenomenal. So I think the most important thing is to constantly rotate assignments, keep changing who covers LeBron, keep changing who covers Kyrie. Don't let them be able to make coaching adjustments. Don't let them to be able to get a rhythm or feel like they can figure out how to score on you. Stevens needs to be one step ahead of Blatt. He has a versatility and the depth that he can stay one step ahead of him. Because when Kyrie and LeBron have been getting their ISO opportunities in the series, they've been absolutely unstoppable. I mean, you saw that play late in the game where LeBron, he got himself an open lane, and he just charged at, I think it was a Zeller or a Olynyk, I can't remember who it was, but he just charged right for the rim, and nobody could stop him, and he drew the foul. And those guys are going to make five or six of those plays every single game, but if you can at least stay one step ahead of them game plan-wise, you're going to be able to cut that down by a few opportunities, and that's going to make a huge difference.
Yeah, I can see that. I have one more question for you before I go again. I know I'm not the host here, but you guys don't mind, right? I throw one more.
Go for it, Alan.
Yeah, so Brandon Bass, to my mind, and I think the numbers back this up, he is a technically the best interior defender on this team. You know, maybe he doesn't quite get as many shots blocked as Zeller, but he's certainly in better position more often than Zeller is defensively. Why did he only play 15 minutes tonight? He had no fouls. I know he was 0 for 6, but it's not like he was taking horrendous shots. I feel like, a guy like Bass, who's an interior defender, like, why didn't he get back in that game in the second half?
Well, the funny thing is he actually had more blocks tonight than Zeller. I'd say the 0 for 6 is probably the biggest reason. Like, he kept trying to shoot, and he kept getting blocked. And his lack of height is starting to prove to be an issue right now, especially when Mozgov is in the game. So Mozgov's got about 5 or 6 inches on him. He's got a ton of length on him. So that's a major issue. Brandon's a good defender against most teams, but when you're going up against Kevin Love, who he matches up pretty decently with, and Love, I think, had another mediocre game, And then LeBron, who has the advantage there usually. And then Mozgov, who's just ginormous. And Tristan Thompson has been, I don't know if he's unsung, but he's playing the role that would be the unsung hero so far in the series. And he's been pretty vital to Cleveland winning these games in the series. And he certainly gets a Tommy Award tonight. I can't imagine Tommy would ever give that award to him, but there's no question he was the Tommy Award winner tonight. But I actually think that Bass is going to see less playing time as we go forward because Stevens wants more deep shooting out there. And Brandon, he can give you 15-foot shooting, but he's not really going to do anything past that.
Right. So it's basically just Olenek is the only real stretch big man they have on the roster.
And Soldier. Soldier hit double threes tonight. Yeah, Drebko didn't really play at all tonight. He got in there in the third quarter, but I was surprised to see him that Soldier completely push him out of the rotation.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised by that, too. I think they need to score quickly in possessions, too, and I think Jurevko's really good at getting out in transition. You know, getting those steals with his long arms and that sort of thing that helps them score. But, yeah, for some reason, he didn't get in the game tonight.
And it shouldn't be lost. The Celtics played a really good game up until about the five-minute mark in this game, in the fourth quarter. They were in control. They were keeping the pace high. They weren't getting killed on the glass anymore. You know, the funny thing is they actually had a gigantic offensive rebound advantage for most of this game until Tristan Thompson got out there and his ass won Cleveland the game, essentially. But they were doing the thing that was – or they were defeating the weakness that killed them in game one, which was Tristan Thompson and Mozgov's offensive rebounding, and that eventually came back around and it killed them in the end. But they were winning the pace battle. They were forcing turnovers. The Celtics thrive on forcing turnovers, getting in the transition, getting defensive rebounds, getting in the transition. That's what they want. They want to be outrunning the opponent. And it was working for so long until the end of the game. And that's what I expected. I predicted the series in five. I thought that every game would be within 10 points. I thought every game would be a close game. And it looks like that's basically what's happening. The Celtics can compete for most of the game, but then at the last 5 minutes, that's when the stars come out and the stars go ISO and they dominate physically. And that's the difference between a growing team and a great team.
All right, guys.
Thanks, Calvin.
Thanks, Calvin.
Thanks.
Yeah, no, Jared, I totally agree. It's you see a good competitive game throughout, which is obviously better than just getting routed every game, which I think some people expected because, as we've talked about before, there's not a lot of nationally televised games until April for the Celtics. So no one really knows like who any of these guys are, and they've obviously exceeded, I'm sure, a lot of people's expectations just keeping the games close and having a chance at the end like they did tonight, which is definitely impressive. But I wanted to get your take on Evan Turner because we haven't talked about him on the show yet. He was 3 for 11 tonight with 9 points, but he had 12 rebounds, which was way more than anyone else had, and he's been rebounding more than anybody in this whole series. What is the reason that he's getting these rebounds and that no one else can? And two, I saw that he criticized the refs at the end, so talk about both of those.
So I actually just tweeted it out before. He said that there were a couple crazy calls. He actually said crazy. I think he's going to get a call from Commissioner Silver in the morning, but he said that the travel call Lee, which I'm trying to even remember which call that was, but the one that stood out to me was Avery Bradley got called for a shooting foul on Kyrie Irving. He was taking a baseline fadeaway. Now, Avery Bradley defended that shot perfectly, still could have committed a foul because Kyrie Irving ended up landing on Avery's foot, which is a pretty important foul. However, the problem that Bennett Salvatore made, and Bennett Salvatore, I don't usually like criticizing the refs because I think that it's pretty biased the way that people criticize the refs. I did think Bennett Salvatore did a pretty horrendous job officiating this game. He made a lot of terrible calls. Most of them, I think, went to Cleveland, but a few of them went Boston's way. But the big one was Kyrie Irving landed on Avery Bradley's foot. However, Kyrie Irving actually almost horizontal at that point and stuck his foot out to where Avery Bradley was landing. So Kyrie Irving, if he wanted to land in his own airspace, was totally fine. He actually kind of reached out and pulled kind of like a pseudo Reggie Miller in which he kind of manipulated where his feet were to make it look like he was getting fouled. if Kyrie Irving landed normally and wasn't trying to draw that foul, he would have been fine. But because he was fading back like that and he stuck his feet out, he ended up landing on Bradley. So that was the wrong call. I think Chris Webber even was saying that, and Chris Webber, I don't know if he was drunk tonight or what was going on with him, but he didn't seem like he was pretty into it. He called Rachel Nichols Rachel Ray. He called Tyler Zeller Cody Zeller. He had one other glaring one I'm forgetting off the top of my head. That was actually the biggest one. But, yeah, it was a pretty weird night for Chris Webber. But I do think he got that one right. And there was a couple other calls late in the game that were kind of fouls that didn't really make sense. You're expecting them to happen, especially when LeBron is involved. It's not surprising. The NBA, one of the biggest issues with officiating in the NBA is that the refs kind of overcompensate for offensive players, so that if offensive players can't get off a good shot, they'll try to call a foul for them to bail them out. I don't know why it's like that, but I guess it's the same philosophy as football with pass interference. But either way, Evan Turner's getting fined. I assume so for saying the refs make crazy calls. That's usually something that's going to get you fined. As far as him getting rebounds, I know this is way too long-winded of an answer, but him getting rebounds is just a matter of that he is crashing the boards pretty well in the series. He's going. I think he needs the ball in his hands and is bringing the ball up the court. I think the Celtics bigs aren't rebounding that well for the most part, and their outlet passing is, I'd say, mediocre at best, maybe decent on some nights. So for him, yeah, I guess he feels most comfortable that to avoid the bigs getting trapped by a press by Cleveland, he's just going to go back in there and crash the boards and get the ball himself so he can bring it up. And it was working pretty well. It was pretty effective when they were doing it. I still don't feel that great about the Celtics trying to run an offense through Evan Turner. It's what they've been doing for the most part, but I actually like it best when they have Marcus Smart starting with the ball, and then Turner comes in off the wing to be the secondary ball handler, and then they can run some pick-and-roll action, some floppy action, stuff like that off of it. I think that's when their offense is probably at its best. But Evan Turner is the only guy that's a reliable ball handler for this team right now, and he's made some pretty amazing ball handling plays so far in the series.
Timmy, you got any thoughts on what Jared's saying or some questions for him?
The only thought that I really have, this isn't exactly what you were saying, but I've just been a little surprised with actually the amount of minutes that Evan Turner has played so far in this series. He's been in the mid-30s in both games. And I would say Marcus Smart absorbed some of those minutes. He did have a team-leading minus 20 tonight, which is really awful, but I thought he looked pretty good when he was out there. I'd like to see more minutes for him and maybe a little bit less for Turner.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised how balanced the Celtics minutes were. So pretty much everybody was hovering between 25 and 30, and then Turner played the most at 33. I mean, Turner's going to get the most because he's a primary opponent against LeBron, and LeBron plays 42 minutes. But the thing is, the Celtics always kind of had this balanced rotation where everybody was hovering around 30 minutes. For most of the season, I thought when they got to the playoffs, the starters are going to be playing way more minutes than that. And they aren't really. I mean, Zeller played 30 minutes tonight while Bass only played 15. It's usually the other way around. There's always going to be one big that plays like 15 minutes and then a couple bigs will play 30. And then the backcourt, like all three of the guards there in the backcourt, they're all going to be playing around 30. And then there's going to be one small forward that plays probably the most minutes, around 35. But in the playoffs, guys should really be playing 35 to 40 minutes. I think it's just that the Celtics are a team that doesn't have that good of a starting lineup, and they're really more of a depth team. I mean, I say most of their – right now, their three best players, and Thomas, Olynyk, and Crowder are all coming off the bench. So that really goes to show how this team is built. And actually, Solinger is the other guy coming off the bench, and he had 14 points tonight and had a lot of points late in the game. So right now, I think the best thing for Stevens is to try to get his best players in the starting lineup and then – go with that lineup as much as they can. Isaiah Thomas should be playing more than 30 minutes. He should be playing heavy minutes. Bradley or Smart, whoever is going that night, should be playing heavier minutes. Really, just these guys, Stevens, I feel like he's still running his team a little bit the way they did in the regular season. But when you're in the playoffs, your top guys need to be playing most of the game. You look at Cleveland, they had LeBron playing 42, Kyrie playing 38, JR playing 34. Kevin Love didn't play a ton of minutes. He only played 30. It's because he was in foul trouble. and he actually had, a mediocre game. And then Mozgov ended up fouling out of the game, so that cut down his minutes a little. But Stevens, he's trying to run the team that he's been running all year, but you got to make that adjustment. You're down 2-0. At this point, you got to find which guys are going to be the best for me throughout the game, and how can I cover up their weaknesses throughout the game. And the main reason why they have to go with such a deep lineup is because they don't have a ton of really good players on their team. The players on the team aren't that good. There's a few guys that aren't that good yet and could be good in the future, but right now they have all these guys that are mostly one-sided players. They're not good on both ends, so you can't really get away with playing them the entire game. So that's why you see it kind of spread out.
Yeah, I totally agree. The thing with Stevens is tough. I mean, he's never done this before. Most of these players haven't done this before. So I can see why he would play the guys kind of regular season minutes and kind of spread it out, because he doesn't really know anything else, and it's tough when you're playing a team that has James and Irving, because like you said, you want to leave the best players in, but are the best players good at both sides of the floor? Like, I totally agree with what you're saying. It's tough, and I think he's really going to have to look in the mirror here in this next day and figure out who he wants to play more. So I think something's got to change, because obviously they're staying competitive, but the ultimate goal for him, because you know he's not going to settle for a sweep or losing in five, because Brad's a competitive dude, and he obviously wants to do the best that he can. He wants to win these games. He's not going to settle for 8 or 10 point losses. And like you said, the best way to do that is to figure out who you can play to be the best players at the crucial times in the games.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. You made the point that Stevens is new to this and all that stuff. Well, yeah, he is, but at the same time, he's got a reputation for being incredibly intelligent, being incredibly forward-thinking, and being ready for the opportunity, ready for whatever challenge faces him. So I'm pretty sure he's not going now, oh, wait a second, I have to make adjustments? I don't know how to do that. Like, he's got it under control. Pretty sure he knows what he's doing. So I'm not really worried. I think he looked at the first two games, as he said, we're going to try to do the best at what we've been doing all year. And it's worked in beating a lot of really good teams in the second half of the season. We're going to really rely on Isaiah Thomas to be the major force carrying the offense. And they're going to rely on the slew of good defenders that they have on this team to try to shut down their two best players, or at least hope to do a little bit of damage to them and be able to make other guys like J.R. Smith and Timofey Mozgov make plays. You know, they've done a good job of forcing J.R. Smith to be the playmaker. And J.R. Smith shot 1-for-8 from deep tonight. He was pretty bad. Again, I think he was bad in the first game. He did have 5 steals, which I think was a career high for him, so that was pretty impressive. But the Celtics are playing their game pretty much as well as they want to. I mean, they obviously could be better, but they're pretty much meeting my expectations of what they were going to do. And we'll see if going home gives them a huge boost. I'm sure it will. I mean, Jared Solinger made the point during his post-game press conference that you knew that the Cavs are going to make runs because the home team always makes runs because they have the crowd on their side. And it's a matter of weathering the storm, but for the Celtics, it was just too late by the time it happened. So Celtics go back to Boston. Boston's got one of the best crowds in pro sports. They're going to be able to motivate them to make a few of those runs. And it'll be interesting to see that the Celtics, who have made a ton of really good runs in the second and third quarters of these two games here, will see how deep those runs go and whether or not they're going to be able to make a fourth quarter run, which is what they really need if they want to win.
Absolutely. Jared, before we let you go, I just want to quickly look at what you're kind of doing there. Give me your prediction for these next two games. Who's going to win the next two games?
So I predicted the series in 5. I had them winning game 4 with their backs against the wall. I still see it going that way. I don't think I've seen any. It's pretty much gone exactly as I expected so far. So I think they're going to win game 4, go back to Cleveland, and Cleveland's probably going to knock them out of the park. But game 3 will be going down to the final couple possessions, and then Kyrie, I think, is the one that makes the big play at the end. Game 4, Celtics, I'm seeing them winning by 7 or 8 points or so, with maybe Marcus Smart hitting a couple threes in that game and being a bit of an offensive force in that game.
All right, fair enough. Tim, you got anything else for Jared?
No, that I was going to ask the same thing. Prediction for the rest of the series.
Sorry, beat you to the punch.
You did. Stole my question.
Jared, you got anything
else
for
us? Thanks for having me on, guys. No, that's it. Actually, let me actually, I got one more thing I have to say. Two more things. One thing, Jared Solinger, actually, you can just go to my Twitter, find it there, tweet out a photo of it. He had these giant clear grandma glasses on tonight. I don't know who allowed him to put them on, but they're pretty hilarious. So definitely give those a check. They're kind of like those like Rick Ross Gucci shades, but they're just glasses, so he looks like a grandma. But those are pretty funny. Just a really good quote from Solinger. He said, "We don't do moral victories around here." I thought that was pretty good. And then Brad Stevens, I'll leave you with this. Brad Stevens said that we've lived on the mindset of the only day that matters is today. That's the only way I know how to live, and that's the only way you can win in this business.
Deep. I love it.
All right. Good night, guys.
Thanks, Jared. All right. There goes Jared Weiss, the host of The Garden Report on CLNS Radio YouTube page. Make sure you go over to youtube.com/CLNS Radio. Check out the YouTube page and all the great work Jared does there. He does the Garden Report after every home game. So I haven't confirmed this with anyone, but I assume he's going to be doing the Garden Report for the next two home games, because what better time to do it than the playoffs? So make sure you check that out. Once again, I want to remind everyone here that you should check out www.reachedapp.com/CLNS. So that's reachedapp.com/CLNS. And we ask many questions about different topics from the Celtics beat show, the Red Sox beat, Patriots beat, and all those good shows. Ask questions, get people involved with the shows and different questions that we have about different points of the team. So make sure you go check out that at www.reachedapp.com/CLNS and get involved. I know I enjoy answering the questions. It's a lot of fun. So once again, this is the Celtics post-game show on CLNS Radio, calling at 347-215-7771. I know basically the whole show has been callers so far, but that makes sense with the playoff game. So Timmy, it's back to the two of us. I'm sure we still have a little bit more to cover here. Don't want to stand here forever, but we haven't gotten a chance to talk too much here with all the callers. So let's do something here. I have to talk about, but I want to see if you got anything specific you want to talk about the game.
I mean, I did want to ask you about Jay Crowder. Just, I know he came up in a few phone calls, and I have my opinion on him. I just wanted to get your take on him.
I'm obsessed with Jay Crowder. I love him. He's the ultimate hustle guy. What I've always said, I've said on past shows, you got to have a guy like Crowder's ability to just hustle, be a kind of a team leader. I know he puts up like Instagram posts of like motivational things, and he's a good clubhouse, let's baseball, locker room guy. And he seems to just like know how to motivate people and get people into the game and get the crowd excited. It'll be good to see the home crowd the next couple of games with him. Maybe it's because he has crowd in his name, so he likes to pump up the crowd. I've never thought of that until right now, but it just came to me. So yeah, I love him. I think he's a great guy. He's a lot of fun to watch. And they should definitely keep him for years to come, because he's a valuable player. I think he'll just keep getting better. He's only 24. He's basically ridden the bench his entire career, and he seems to really have found a spot here in Boston and gotten some good playing time, figured out how to be a good player. I think he's great. I don't mind starting him either. There's no reason not to switch it up, because you got nothing to lose.
Yeah, I feel similarly about him. I mean, I remember in the first half of the game, he really – I wouldn't say he was a liability. It wasn't like he was Brandon Bass out there, but he really wasn't doing a whole lot of contributing. I mean, I just have a note next to his name, and it just says ugly, which just – he was just taking bad shots, I thought. But then in the second half of the game, he was definitely instrumental in some of the big plays in the game that held the Celtics in there. So 4-for-10 shooting is – pretty standard for Jay Crowder, I'd say. And you really don't come to him for his shooting as much as you do his absolute hustle, and his defense, obviously, on LeBron is one of the only things I think that kept the Celtics in so tight in this series.
Yeah, I'm encouraged by his offense. I know he doesn't do great every game, and like you said, 4-for-10 is kind of standard for him, but he's a great defense guy. He's a hustle guy. All of his offense is really gravy, and he's had a couple pretty big games where he scored over 20 points. So I would not be at all surprised. You can even mark my word on it if you want. I wouldn't be surprised if he scored like somewhere between like 17 and 22 points in game three. I bet he's going to be motivated. He loves the home crowd. I think he's going to be really into game three.
All right, I am going to hold you to that. I would love to see Jay Crowder score somewhere. I'd be happy to see him pop up into 15-20 range. So I'm going to keep you on that one.
Good. I hope it happens. I hope I'm right because they could really use it. I mean, like tonight, Thomas scored 22, Sullinger scored 14, and a lot of numbers around 11, 10, 9. You could use a couple more guys in the 15-20 range to be successful.
Yeah, absolutely could.
Right. Glad we're around that. So we kind of talked about it a little bit with some of the callers, just especially Jared at the rebounding. It's like Turner had 12, Zeller had 6, and Crowder and Sullinger had 5. The offensive rebounds were good. We had 13, which is actually more than Cleveland. They had 12. They still out rebounded us by 8, which is a big difference and has been in both games. But just big guys not crashing the boards for some reason. Evan Turner getting 12. Like, he's one of the smaller guys in the court. What is it with this Cavs team that just like makes it that the Celtics can't get rebounds besides Turner?
I actually have no clue about that. Evan Turner's 12 rebounds. I mean, that's happened all season long. He had 5 triple doubles or something like that?
Three.
Every 3 triple doubles. Yeah, 5 might be a little much for him. But 3 triple doubles, and every one of them, I feel like, was the most quiet triple double you'll see in the NBA. And even with his rebounds, I mean, I don't remember watching him pull in 12 rebounds tonight. I don't know if it's where he positions himself or what, but I thought our best looking rebounder out there was probably Jared Sullinger with 5. Like I said, I really like those 3 offensive rebounds. Even if, like Calvin said, a couple of them just fell into his hand. So
still counts.
What do you think of the rebounding tonight?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. It's kind of a mystery. It is weird when a guard, well, I guess Turner's a small forward technically, even though he's basically a point guard. It's always strange when someone like that gets double-digit rebounds. Like you said, he's pretty much done it all year long. I don't know. Maybe it's the Cavs not missing a ton of shots and getting a lot of their own offensive rebounds, but guys like Sullinger and Zeller and Bass and Olynyk, they just need to get their nose in there and just fight the rebounds away. It's like they're not physical enough. I don't know. All the offensive rebounds are concerning. They gotta bulk up or get in the weight room or do something, because none of them are like gigantic guys weight wise except Sullinger. So maybe they just need to get stronger and just really fight and battle down in there more. Even though Turner's not that big and he gets 12, so I don't know. It's a mystery. I'm just trying to find answers here, but it needs to change. They need to. I think out rebounding the Cavs in future games could go a really long way.
Right. At the half in this game, actually, the Celtics had 23 rebounds and the Cavs had 20. So it was really that second half run where the Celtics took it over. I don't know if it was Tristan Thompson getting in the game more with Mozgov and Love and foul trouble, but I'd really like to see Kelly Olynyk contributing a little bit more than 2 rebounds in 21 minutes.
He needs to play more and he needs to stay out of foul trouble. He played 21 minutes and he had 4 fouls. He's got to stay in the court. But the problem with him is that he's not that strong, so he kind of gets muscled around. And then if he does anything to try to play defense, and it's so frustrating. Anytime he tries to play defense, they immediately call a foul on him. And it's happened all year long. And you can't get into a rhythm defensively because when he tries as hard as he can, because he's not that big, I understand. I'm a skinny dude too, and I've always had trouble when I play pickup basketball with getting there and rebounding. And playing defense, it's tough, and I feel for him because it's not an easy thing, and he just doesn't catch any breaks.
Yeah, there's certainly the officiating's been relentless on Kelly Olynyk all year. I think now he just has their reputation, and they stick to those in the NBA when it comes to refereeing.
Absolutely. Like back what the first caller Nick was talking about. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to blame loss on the refs. Obviously the Cavs are an elite team and the Celtics are up and coming, but it does make it tough. And it's impressive that the Celtics have only lost by a couple points in each game with that, because like, I think basically every caller tonight talked about the Bradley foul on Irving that certainly foul. And there's just been stuff like that. It was a foul early in the game on LeBron. I think it was in the second quarter. I can't exactly remember, but he just driving to the basket and the defender just backed up and nothing happened. He didn't get touched. Nobody fouled him and they called a foul. It's just that stuff happens. And it's just free points and extra fouls in Celtics. And they can't afford that. They need to be foul free and have everyone at their disposal and not have to take someone like Olynyk out with four fouls or Bradley out with four fouls because of these picky fouls that aren't.
Right. Just one point on LeBron with the referees that bothers me is not so much the amount of fouls that he gets called, because that is standard among the stars in the league. I mean, you see the same thing with Steph Curry and James Harden. The thing that bothers me, though, is the non-calls against LeBron James and the whole Cleveland team, but specifically LeBron. I mean, in the first half of game one, he had that blatant reach-in on Tyler Zeller underneath the hoop, and I remember them not calling it. And it's just very frustrating.
I'm with you on that. I was up in arms about that call. He was all over Zeller's arms and no foul. And then anytime anyone breathes on him, he's just like up in the ref's face and can't believe it. He's such a frustrating guy. I mean, I get it. You're the best player in the league. I don't, everyone calls him the best player in the world. I'm not willing to go that far, but I don't like, I understand how he, like, maybe some people think he deserves the calls because of how good he is. But if he's so good, he shouldn't need to have fouls called every single play.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point.
Makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, doesn't seem like rocket science to me. If he's so great, he should be able to play the entire game with no one even touching him, which basically happens because no one really does touch him because he just drives the basket and either doesn't get touched because no one can defend him or doesn't get touched and he gets to the line. So it doesn't really matter what you do.
Yeah, that's true.
So frustrating. The guy for me is Kyrie Irving. You got to stop. It's LeBron's going to do his thing. He's going to score his points and he commands a lot of attention, but it's Irving really the guy that we need to focus on.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And the thing with Irving is LeBron shot 50% from the field tonight. Like you said, 1-for-5 from behind the arc. Kyrie Irving, his percentage was slightly lower, but whether it's Avery Bradley or Marcus Smart or even Isaiah Thomas, I mean, there are some shots where they're just right in his face and he seems to just hit him anyway. And nothing gets that Cleveland crowd more fired up than that. And that's killed the Celtics in both games. Just him hitting those crazy contested shots and just bringing the entire building alive.
Yeah, that's it. It's funny when you watch these games, like LeBron scores and it's just normal. Like it's expected. No one really gets bothered by it. Like, oh, LeBron scored a couple points in a row. It's like whatever. But whenever Irving scores, I think it drives, in this series, Celtics fans crazy because you only want LeBron to score because he's supposed to be the star player. It's like Irving's this guy, he's really young and he's never even played in the playoffs before and he's just destroying you on backbreaking shots and just hurting you at the worst possible moments. Like I think he's the reason. I mean, LeBron's obviously the real reason that they have a 2-0 lead because Irving wouldn't be as good if he didn't have LeBron commanding the attention, but Irving's shots hurt more in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree completely with that. And I don't remember. I think it was Jared who said it, but I would love to see Marcus Smart come up big in either game 3 or 4 and kind of respond to the other young point guard who doesn't have playoff experience in Kyrie Irving. I would love to see Marcus Smart hit some big threes and score 15 or 20 points, especially at home in Boston.
Yeah, that would be spectacular. I'm impressed with Smart so far. I mean, he put up 10 points tonight. He's not taking too many shots. He shot 4-for-9 tonight, which is not a bad percentage. I think he's played quietly, and he hasn't like got anybody's face. But he's showing that he's out there. He's scoring some points. He's making some shots. So for his first two playoff games for a 20-year-old, I'm happy with this play so far. I would love to see him score like a 15-20 point game. If we get Smart and Crowder scoring 20 points each, oh, you can lock game 3 up.
Yeah, there you go. And I have to say, I'm really pulling for game 3. If they're only going to win one game, I want it to be game 3 because I'm going with my dad and I can't wait. And I would love to see the Celtics.
Oh, you're going? Oh, man.
I am. Uh-oh. I grabbed the tickets for very cheap, actually, before they even locked them up. So, very excited.
Wow. Have fun with that. That'll be great.
Yeah, it should be. But
I want to head over to audiblepodcast.com/Celtics and get your free audio book from CLNS Beat Podcast Series. It's the world's biggest online library, so check out audiblepodcast.com/Celtics. So before we wrap up here, I wanna move on and look past this game. Just a little quick thing on to game three here. Preview it a bit, get our thoughts on it. So we've talked about how we want to score 20 points each, which would be fantastic. Obviously, we want Brandon Bass and Avery Bradley to show up because that's necessary with your two of your longest tenured team members. That's all going to be important. Those are the obvious things. Give me two or three key points for either offensively or defensively that you think would be crucial for the Celtics to actually pick up a win instead of.
Well, I want to see Isaiah Thomas cut down the turnovers. I want to see Kelly Olynyk play a few more minutes, score more points, and grab some rebounds. And I think I want to see Jay Crowder grab a few more minutes and really mark up on LeBron like he has been. So those are my key points.
Nice. Like them all, that could all help for a win. My key points, going off a little bit, we've talked about so far and callers have talked about, got to improve the three-point shooting. 6 for 22 tonight. We saw what three-point shooting can do. The Cavs were 13 for 31 last game, and they played really well. If the Celtics can shoot, 45 to 50% on threes instead of 27%, they could go a long way to winning the game. Isaiah Thomas was 0 for 3 tonight. If he can hit like 2 or 3 or 4, that could really help. I'm not complaining about him. He was 22 points and perfect from the free throw line. So three-pointers, that's one key for me. Keep forcing turnovers is my next point. They forced 18 tonight, and that definitely helps to getting a win. If they could have just gotten a couple more stops tonight, maybe 20 turnovers, they may have been able to win the game. So turnovers is my second, and then my third is just keep trying to get rebounds, get other people to get rebounds who aren't just Evan Turner. Make sure you get the rebounds, make the threes, and force the turnovers. I think that's the success to winning. They did it better tonight, and they came even closer to winning. So those are my three key points for the game tonight. Before we wrap it up, any final thoughts on tonight's game or anything else from the callers or anything else about game three?
I think we got in everything that I wanted to say, unless you got anything else.
Well, I want to say have fun. The game on Thursday, that's gonna be a raucous crowd. Please yell as much as you can and get the
of course. Get
the fans into it. Really, they're gonna need it. They need a good crowd backing, and hopefully you can provide that to them. I'm jealous. I can't wait to watch the game. It's gonna be great.
Yeah.
One of the best crowds there is. So. Have fun with that. Make sure you check out lynda.com/CLNS, www.lynda.com/CLNS to get your free 10-day trial to lynda.com. And that is going to do it for tonight. Tim, you want to give your Twitter handle so everyone can go out there and follow you?
Yeah, sure. You can follow me at tsclafani20. Sclafani, that's S-C-L-A-F-A-N-I. And you can read my writing at hardwoodhoudini.com, fansided. Thank you.
Beautiful. And you can find me at CLNS_JessSayin. My name is Jess Thomas. He's Timmy Sclafani. Cleveland beats Boston 99-91. You're listening to the CLNS Radio Celtics post-game show. Call into future shows at 347-215-7771. And have a great game three. Go Celtics. Hope they can win a couple games here. Good night.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNS Radio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.